Hello, welcome back to another episode of In the Money. I'm Constantine Vrondopoulos of Fidelity's Trading Strategy Desk. And with me here today, as always, Tony Zhang, Chief Strategist over there at Options Play. Tony, it's been a minute. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing well. We've had quite a week this week, so really looking forward to diving into what we're looking at from a macro perspective and some of the ideas that we have right now.
Yeah, absolutely, Tony. I mean, one word is wow. There's a lot going on. Over the past week, global equity markets traded with a cautious tone. Global indices, equity indices were lower. Bond prices were lower. The US dollar was lower. If you look under the hood a bit of the S&P 500 and consider market breadth, I guess there is still continuous rotation between sectors. So that is keeping the S&P 500 relatively balanced. But I'm curious to hear, Tony, what are you making of all this action? There's been a lot of back and forth.
Yeah, I think markets have seen a pretty substantial turnaround here this week, starting off with a pretty substantial risk-off tone this to start off the week, predominantly driven by surprise tariffs that Tr President Trump was threatening to put on the eight NATO allies, starting on February 1st, in their threat against the US takeover of Greenland. That was a pretty substantial shock here to the market starting off the week. And then we also had the Japanese bond market have a bit of a tantrum earlier this week, selling off pretty heavily, seeing some of the biggest moves we've seen in yields. And that was a little bit of a precursor for what could happen here in the US. And we are starting to see, we saw some tremors of that, late last year with regards to some weak 30, 20 and 30 year bond auctions here. The 20 year bond auction yesterday wasn't particularly strong. So this is still a big concern, I think, for investors. But if you look at how investors have turned around, obviously President Trump has rescinded his expectations for those tariffs. That has been changing risk sentiment to a more of a risk on sentiment. And also the Japanese bond sell-off seemingly has stabilized a little bit. And that also has improved sentiment. So, it's interesting to see the VIX starting off the week, at around 20%, and now we're back below 16%. That really just shows you how much the markets have come back from the start of the week, from a very risk-off environment and tone to a much more positive, optimistic tone here going forward. But I think that, if you look underneath the surface, not everything is all clear. We still see gold at all-time highs, and this is really showing us that safe haven demand still remains incredibly high in this type of market environment. You look at how the markets reacted to relatively positive earnings news, such as from Netflix, with the stock down 6% since that announcement. It really just shows that the markets are still fairly fragile. There's still a lot of concern around the valuations of these of different types of companies. And you see the 10-year yield spike to 4.3% here this week and still holding well above that 4.2% level that it broke out from over the past couple of weeks. This is really starting to show that the correlation between bonds and stocks have flipped back into positive territory where, because yields are rising, we're continuing to see that the equity markets are trading to the downside as a result of it. So this is something that I think we need to pay attention to here right now. Rising yields, despite the fact that the Fed has cut interest rates, is really a big concern here. Going forward, you have, or rather, we just saw GDP numbers being revised up higher here earlier this morning. We saw PCE inflation coming in largely as expected, and this really, puts us towards the Fed announcement here next week. An important thing to look forward to is the fact that inflation has largely come in to what we expected to, yet the overall economy continues to see some levels of cooling from a labor perspective, but overall remains fairly resilient. This is going to likely keep the Fed from cutting interest rates further at the moment. And if you look at the S&P 500, we're seeing that the fact that the S&P 500 is trading at just shy of that 7,000 level. We traded below that, obviously, but we've managed to get back above that level here to the $7,000 level. And this is, a concern that we see here with the markets right now is the fact that interest rates are back above 4.2%. We're seemingly failing to get back above that $7,000 level. And with the Fed likely keeping rate expectations where they are right now, I think we're likely going to see, we're likely, I think we're going to see markets struggle to break out above that $7,000 level here unless corporate earnings really power through and we start to see earnings, especially from the major tech names, beat expectations and trade higher here. But overall, the Magnificent Seven continues to drag the markets lower. We have seen some sector rotation that improves market breadth, which is a relatively positive for the market. But overall, right now, that $7,000 level on the S&P remains a major psychological level that we seem to have trouble breaking out above.
Yeah, Tony, let me take us back about a month. So the last time I was here presenting on the In the Money show was December 18th, and that was our last show of the year of 2025. And I think your message back then was very clear. We're trading in the S&P at around 6720 or so. And you said, I'm expecting a seasonal drift higher in a low liquidity environment into the Christmas holidays, but the bulls must hold the line at 6,700. If they don't, we're likely going to see a door open up towards 6,550, that lower barrier of potential support. So those were your targets. Now, fast forward, here we are 1 month later. Bulls did hold the line. We did see a positive drift into the Christmas holiday into the end of the year and the beginning of 2026. Now, on the back of the most recent pullback over the last two trading sessions or so, we've effectively, technically speaking, put on or put in a potential higher low here. So the lows of yesterday and the day prior were somewhere around 6,800, which would be 100 points higher than the prior December low. So purely technically speaking, the question that I have for you, and I understand that there's a lot going on. There's a Fed meeting next week. There are a lot of very large market capitalization names that are going to be reporting next week. But purely from the technical perspective, the fact that we could potentially be setting in a higher low here, still within an overarching intermediate to long-term uptrend, does that give you any confidence that we could maybe make a new high and continue to push higher in this piece?
It definitely does. So a couple of things, right? As you said, we've despite the sell-off we saw here this week and the VIX spiking to that 20% level, we managed to make a new higher low. That is significant. We talked about the 6,700 level needing to hold for the bulls. That has been in place. Now that we've made a higher low, that is a relatively strong indication here, especially since that higher low was essentially put in as a result of a couple of macro themes that were that I would say got resolved here this week. One with regards to potential new tariffs with Europe over Greenland. If that is really off the table here, that definitely clears the deck a little bit from some of the macro risks that we saw here with the overall market. Also, the Japanese bond market seemingly at the moment has stabilized. That's another major macro concern or risk that I see here at the market. And if that has been also cleared, that opens the pathway, if you will, back up to that $7,000 level. I think a really important level that we need to see the markets close above this week is the 6,940 level. That essentially fills the gap that we saw here at the beginning of this week. If we can get above 6,940 at the end of the week, that really opens up us to get back above 7,000, to get pushing up to 7,000 and get above that. But like I said, I think the big concern that I see here as to whether or not we can break above 7,000 and hold that level is really coming down to interest rates. Whether or not the Fed is going to provide guidance in terms of what expectations are going to be in Q1 and potentially the first half of 2026 is going to be important. That is going to be important, and what the market is likely going to be viewing in terms of the optimism that we see here in terms of whether we can get above 7,000 and hold 7,000 on the S&P.
Absolutely, Tony. Tune in next week for additional updates, of course, from Tony. With that very structured technical and fundamental and macro backdrop in mind, I'm curious what the first trade idea of the week is, Tony.
Yeah, I want to take a look at a stock, CVS. Specifically, as I said, in this type of macro environment, we're seeing kind of the Magnificent Seven and the major tech growth stocks drag the markets higher. But and the S&P largely being flat here for, I'll call it the last 2 months or so. Despite that, we continue to see market breadth in the rest of the market play catch up here. And healthcare is definitely one of those sectors playing quite a bit of catch up here. And CVS, I think, is an interesting play within the healthcare space as they transition from this multi-year earnings drawdown into what looks like a new growth phase, or finally starting a new growth phase after what has been a 2 year fight with activists over board seats and the overall strategy for the company. The stock trades still at a very significant discount from a valuation perspective, and I think as it re-enters a growth phase, this is an interesting opportunity to take a look at CVS. If you look at the stock here, the stock has largely been range bound, call it between 85 and I'm sorry, 75 and 80, 82 here to the upside. And we just started to break out above that level here today. So what's interesting is that we're breaking out above a base that's been formed here over the last 3 months or so. It's outperformed the S&P 500 as it does that, and it opens this up for upside into the $95 upside target that I have here for the stock. And if you look at the business here, we're trading at around 11 times forward earnings. That's about a 40% discount to the overall healthcare industry. Now, CVS is certainly isn't growing as fast as the healthcare industry, and net margins at the moment, profit margins are effectively zero. But this is really where, as they start to guide 2026 EPS into the mid-teens in terms of EPS growth, this is really where we expect to see margin can start to recover. CVS pays a 3.3% dividend yield, which certainly provides a little bit of a downside cushion, especially if you consider the fact that it's trading at such rock bottom valuations. And I think this is really where the asymmetry starts to skew the risk here more here to the upside rather to the downside, especially if you consider the fact that they've been doing some interesting work with regards to Athena, the insurance arm of CVS, and the medical benefit ratio is starting to come down here in 2026. We're starting to see some of the improvements in terms of margin as they route their Athena members into Oak Street Health as rather than hospitals, and that's been meaningfully coming down, bringing down cost. And just overall, if they just are able to execute modestly on their overall strategy, I think the upside is fairly meaningful given the current valuations that it trades at. So the way I want to play this here is to look at selling options. I'm looking at going out to the February 27th weekly option. Looking at selling in the 8176 put vertical. What that means is I'm selling the $81 put for roughly a little over $3 and buying the $76 put for about $1.50, net net collecting about $1.80 for this $5 wide credit spread. And what this allows me to do is take advantage of a potential bullish move here for CVS. But if it just simply stays where it is and holds above this $82 resistance level or support, which is now support, this is a strategy that can be profitable even if CVS takes a little bit more time for investors to really take hold and start buying this particular stock, that even if it just trades sideways above this base and maybe forms takes a little bit of time and forms a new base, selling options is another strategy that gives me the ability to make a profit even if it just stays where it is. And this is the type of structure that I think makes sense for CVS this right now, given the fact that, we're still seeing we're still seeing of whether or not management can prove out their growth strategy to be successful. And in this meantime, I think it's better to be an option seller rather than hoping that we see a big move here to the upside in a short period of time.
Yeah, Tony, we got over 50 viewer registration questions last week, and a common theme that I have noticed or saw when I was reviewing those questions was the fact that people, market participants, traders, Fidelity clients here wonder, what do you do with a trade if it starts to move against you? I mean, that makes sense. If it moves in your favor, you're making money. But if it moves against you, you are wondering, what do you do, when do you do it, and what the parameters are. So the question that I wanted to ask you is a little more involved. I noticed that CVS expected earnings are the 10th of February. You're obviously picking an expiration with a few weeks after that event. The front month implied volatility is elevated into the earnings event, and you're looking to sell some Vega. You were looking to sell some implied volatility, take advantage of that expanded vol. So, the question that I have for you is for this type of a trade, I mean, do you expect to hold it through the earnings event, regardless of the circumstance, and look to manage thereafter? Or is it something that traders should anticipate potentially managing prior to the event based on some criteria that you have?
Yeah, I think that's a fantastic question. And whenever you are selling an option strategy heading into earnings, this is a big question that you have as to whether or not you should hold it through earnings or potentially take profits or cut your losses before earnings. And that's part of why I'm using a defined risk strategy here is because earnings is coming up and a lot that can happen. And because I'm using a defined risk strategy, this is really where I would feel fairly comfortable holding it through earnings, especially because my thesis is a fairly bullish thesis that I think will start to play out in the earnings announcements over the next few quarters as we start to see management confirm that they are going to hit their guidance numbers for 2026. If they're able to do it, that's really where I expect the stock to re-rate, from that 11 times forward earnings, closer to maybe 15 to 16 times forward earnings throughout the year as the team can prove out that their guidance is true. So from the short answer to your question is that yes, I would feel comfortable holding this trade through earnings. However, given the fact that there's still a few weeks between now and the earnings announcement, chances are that if the stock starts to drift higher, I could potentially make enough profit on this particular trade to close out this trade prior to earnings and maybe structure a new one heading into earnings where I would essentially lock in some profits from the initial trade and roll that into the second trade and improve the risk reward on that. And on the flip side, if let's say heading into earnings, the stock starts to move against me, the rule of thumb that I have with the credit spread is that if I lose the amount that I've received in a credit. So in this particular case, I'm receiving $180 of credit per contract that I'm selling. If I lose $180 or more per contract, that's a good time where you might want to close out this trade and simply reevaluate the timing or the thesis of this particular trade because the max risk here is $320. I don't really want to sit there and wait till I see the max loss before I move away from this trade. If I lose $180 out of the 320 max risk, that's really where I would start reassessing this trade and thinking about cutting my losses and moving on. So you have the opportunity of hitting that stop loss level or that take profit level prior to that earnings announcement. And if we do that prior to the earnings announcement, like I said, if I'm taking profits, I would simply roll it and look at locking in some gains and maybe reestablishing a new trade and recentering it based on the current prices of the stock at that time. But if the stock starts to work again, against me, I also will manage this and close this before that earnings date. But if it doesn't, I'm feeling comfortable holding this through earnings because of the thesis that I have and the fact that I have defined risk in the worst case scenario.
Thank you, Tony. You covered both sides. That's fantastic. We have another trade idea for everybody in the audience this week, and that one is in a different sector rather than healthcare. What do we got here, Tony?
Yeah, I'm looking at a firm, obviously in the credit services sector. And this is a stock that has performed relatively well here last year at the end of last year, but the stock has really struggled since then. And there was a lot of hype around the fact that they were being added to the Apple Pay platform as a buy now pay later option within Apple Pay. However, as you can see, price action has failed to hold on to those gains, and it's starting to show that buyers are clearly, there's signs that buyers are exhausted, and that there's likely that this is more of a distribution that we're seeing here right now rather than accumulation, especially if you look at the macro environment for lower risk, I'm sorry, lower income consumers, which tends to be the primary customer base of a firm. That's a group that is starting to see some cracks in terms of consumer spending, and that's really where I see some downside risks for a firm, especially if you consider the relatively rich valuations that it trades at. If you first look at the stock chart here, as you can see, after breaking out above 80 at the end of last year, it has spent pretty much all of this year below that level here. At the end of last year and the beginning of this year, below 80. It tried to crack above that level a couple of weeks ago, but failed. And that's really the signs that, we're starting to see distribution rather than just simply a consolidation range. We start to see that a firm is continuing to underperform relative to the S&P 500, which is not a particularly good sign when the stock is trading sideways. So for those reasons, I think that there's some downside risks looking at the stock from a macro perspective and as well as look at the chart. And then if you look at the valuations, we're trading at about 8 times revenue, which is, multiples higher than its peers. The group is the industry is trading on average around 3 times revenue. So the fact is trading at 8 times revenue and, trading at north of 50 times forward earnings is really what leads me to believe that there's some downside risks with this particular stock, especially as the macro environment starts to get more challenging for a firm. And then you just add on top of the fact that profit margins are pretty thin for a firm. We're looking at about 7% net profit margins, which gives it very little wiggle room in any type of slowdown in terms of consumer spending. If they have to tighten lending requirements as a result of credit ratings starting to fall here. So, and just generally speaking, the younger, lower income borrowers that a firm predominantly has as their client base, this is really where we're starting to see the significant erosion in consumer spending is in that particular category. So a firm is unfortunately at risk, in my opinion, in the macro environment that we're in. And with such thin margins to protect it, that's really where I think the valuations have some significant risks in this environment. So the buy now pay later, business that has kind of driven the rallies that we saw here last year for a firm, that's really where I think it actually carries a substantial amount of risk. And also just, there's a lot of competition in that particular space right now. There's not a particularly differentiated that a firm provides that any other buy now pay later provider provides. And that's really a risk here from a price perspective as well. We see credit delinquencies continue to rise in 2026, especially amongst lower income, younger cohorts. And just the valuations, I think, represents a pretty significant downside risk right now. So I think the best way to play this at the moment, given that implied volatilities like CVS are elevated, is to also be selling premium, but to the downside. So I'm going out to the February expiration. I'm looking at selling the 72.86 call vertical here, essentially selling the $72 calls, I'm sorry, for around $6.20, and buying the $86 calls against it for about $2.10. Net net, collecting about $4.10 for this $14 wide credit spread. And this basically, similar to CVS, allows me to profit if a firm's moves lower, or if it simply hangs out around this consolidation range for a while before it breaks down. This will be profitable even if it just trades sideways. And if it does break below that major support level here around around us, just a little bit below 70 here, that's really where I would consider looking at buying puts or buying put spreads to try to capture what could be a bigger move here to the downside that I think will materialize. But until it does, my preference is to be sell as a seller of options rather a buyer.
Yeah, Tony, very good. Clearly, the structures are similar, risk rewards are a little different. So, I have a couple of follow-up questions for you, as I normally do. Affirm currently has an unconfirmed exact earnings date, but based on its previous earnings announcement, we anticipate that it will likely be at the end of the first week of February here. So, coming up again, Tony is picking an expiration that drives through the event and expires after. But Tony, being an option strategist here, when I first looked at the chart this morning of Affirm in a kind of zoomed in version over the last couple of years on a daily time frame, I noticed that on those earnings flags on the chart in Fidelity Trader Plus, there were really large moves. And so I did a little bit of digging and went back and saw that over the past 4 quarters, each and every time a firm moved double digits in percent terms, either up or down. And so that made me want to go and do some math. And so I did. Over the past 2 years, which is 8 quarters, folks, the median implied move of a firm and the median realized a move of a firm over the past 8 quarters has been over 13.5% up or down. So it tends to be not a snoozer. It tends to be a mover. Okay. So, given that and keeping that in mind, I'm curious again, with the implied volatility elevated here, you're selling a credit spread, selling Vega, trying to take advantage of the potential contraction of implied volatility after the event might come and go. But this stock has a different personality to CVS. So, I'm curious, based on that factor, based on the differences in implied volatility, based on the differences in the risk reward ratios of the spread structures, would you suggest the trade management structure that would be different than of that at CVS that we just discussed?
And the characteristics of this stock certainly is different, but that's really why the strike price selection, varies, right? So we always vary the strike price selection based on the underlying volatility of the stock. But overall, the thought process doesn't change, right? We're short volatility because of how volatile this stock can be going into earnings, and we expect that implied volatility to come in significantly after that earnings announcement, which is why my preference is to be short vol going into that earnings announcement. But the fact that I'm using a defined risk strategy is because of that potential for that big move here on earnings. Yes, I will attempt to manage this prior to earnings, especially if I have the opportunity to take some profits and lock in those profits and potentially roll those profits into another short call spread, or maybe by that time, if let's say the stock has drifted lower and starts to break below that support level, or starts to show that that support level might break, and the earnings being the catalyst for it, I might flip that to a long put or a long put spread. But at the moment, because we still have potentially a couple of weeks between now and that earnings announcement, in that environment, my preference is to be short vol rather than holding on to time decay and having that work against me going in that earnings announcement. And if I am going to be long volatility for that earnings announcement, I would likely only be long for just a couple of days, essentially buying it the day before earnings and maybe looking to get out of it within a couple of days after to try to capture that big, as you say, 13% move here if it does move to the downside.
Super, Tony. Thank you for that breakdown. Speaking of rolling profits, we got to look back. It is a trade, in fact, that you and I discussed on December 18th, the last time that I hosted the show again. So stars are aligning here. The trade went very well. What are we doing with it today, sir?
Yeah, this was a trade that we put out at the end of December. I think it was actually the same show that you were on, where we laid out a bullish thesis for Amgen. We saw that Amgen was trading at around 325 at the time. We put on a February 330, 360 call spread. The stock is up to just a shy of 350 right now. So that call spread that we bought for about $8.80 is now trading just around $17.50, which represents about a 100% gain on that debit spread. So generally speaking, as a rule of thumb, whenever you buy a debit spread, if you reach 100% gain on that debit spread, it's probably a good time to consider managing that trade. So, at first glance, one of the things that you can do is simply take profits on this particular trade, and you look at, like I said, about an $875 profit on this trade, which is essentially a 100% gain on the trade. However, from my perspective, when the market proves your thesis to be correct, your bullish thesis to be correct, you have an opportunity to potentially take what is a very nice gain here and see if you can try to hit a home run if the momentum continues. And Amgen has now broken out above that 330 level. It has the opportunity to potentially continue moving higher here. So I think the thing that I would do is, instead of just simply closing out this trade and taking profits, I would look at rolling this trade out to the March expiration, buying myself another 2 months worth of upside potential here, and recentering the strikes based on where the stock is traded now. So the stock is just shy of 350. So instead of originally we had the 330, 360 call spread, I'm going to move everything up by $20, which is where the stock has moved up to, and look at buying the March 350, 380 call spread. Earlier today, you can pay about $10, a little over $10 for that spread, $10.10. And what that would mean is that if you take the profits that I've made on the first trade and roll that into the second trade, the risk reward on my new trade has a total risk of only $135 per contract, but has a maximum profit potential of 20 over $2,800 per contract. So if Amgen is above 380 by that March expiration, my total profit on this particular trade is around $2,800 per contract. And worst case scenario, if Amgen is below 350 at March, then I'm basically losing $135. So I like that. I obviously like that risk for reward here, and I always take opportunities to hit home runs like this once the market proves my original thesis to be correct and that momentum starts to take off. If that momentum continues, I want to take advantage of that by taking by rolling my trades and managing this trades rather than simply just taking profits and moving on.
Super Tony, new all-time highs here for Amgen, folks. If you are interested, of course, in reviewing Tony's original thesis for this trade, you can go back and replay our show from December 18th. There was a lot of fundamental and technical crumbs in there that you probably would like to listen to. This brings us to a close. Thank you so much to all of our viewers for tuning in. Tony, thank you for bringing all the fresh and new trade ideas here to us in the year of 2026. I mean, essentially, this was not one, not two, but three trade ideas. So thank you for that.
Thank you so much, KV. It's been a pleasure. Looking forward to doing the show next week.
Folks, don't forget, my team, the Trading Strategy Desk team, does a follow-up to this particular presentation, to the In the Money show, every Friday at 1:30 Eastern Standard Time. You could find us by going to fidelity.com/in-the-money-follow-up. And all other things, of course, that Fidelity Trading Strategy Desk puts on a daily basis in front of mic and camera. Fidelity.com/coaching is an easy way to find us. If you're looking for something interesting investments related to read, fidelity.com/activeinvestorweekly for our newsletter. Thank you so much. We're looking forward to seeing you all back here next week, and we appreciate your comments and questions that we're able to ask of Tony Live. Take care, everybody. We'll see you again soon.
Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Options trading entails significant risk and is not appropriate for all investors. Certain complex option strategies carry additional risk. Before trading options, contact Fidelity Investments by calling 800-544-5115 to receive a copy of characteristics and risks of standardized options. Supporting documentation for any claims, if applicable, will be furnished upon request. There are additional costs associated with option strategies that call for multiple purchases and sales of options, such as spreads, straddles, and collars, as compared with a single option trade. Technical analysis focuses on market action, specifically volume and price. Technical analysis is only one approach to analyzing stocks. When considering which stocks to buy or sell, you should use the approach that you're most comfortable with. As with all of your investments, you must make your own determination as to whether an investment in any particular security or securities is right for you based on your investment objectives, risk tolerance, and financial situation. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Greeks are mathematical calculations used to determine the effect of various factors on options. Indexes are unmanaged. It is not possible to invest directly in an index. Views expressed are as of the date indicated, based on the information available at that time, and may change based on market or other conditions. Unless otherwise noted, the opinions provided are those of Options Play, and not necessarily those of Fidelity Investments or its affiliates. Fidelity does not assume any duty to update any of the information. News, commentary, market data, and research reports are from third-party sources unaffiliated with Fidelity, unless otherwise noted, and are provided for informational purposes only. Fidelity does not endorse or adopt third-party content. Fidelity makes no guarantee that the information supplied is accurate, complete, or timely, and does not provide any warranties regarding results obtained from their use. Any screenshots, charts, or company trading symbols mentioned are provided for illustrative purposes only and should not be considered as an offer to sell, a solicitation of an offer to buy, or a recommendation for the security. Options Play and Fidelity Investments are independent entities and are not legally affiliated. The third-party trademarks appearing herein are the property of their respective owners. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC. Member NYSE SIPC. Copyright 2024 FMR LLC. All rights reserved. 1109225.1.0. Information provided in the podcast is general in nature, is provided for informational purposes only, and should not be construed as investment or tax advice. Fidelity Investments disclaims any liability for any direct or incidental loss incurred by applying any of the information in this podcast. This podcast is intended for U.S. persons only and is not a solicitation for any Fidelity product or service. This podcast is provided for your personal non-commercial use and is the copyrighted work of FMR LLC. You may not reproduce this podcast in whole or in part in any form without the permission of FMR LLC.